Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy! I heard Biden was a loser. I mean, look, Joe never got more than 1%.
And now, your hosts.
Oh, the sweet music. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Mudstack Podcast. My friend, how are you?
Here. Well, as the great Keith Richards would say, sir, it's good to be here. It's good to be anywhere. It's a bizarre time, but this is the best place for I feel both of us to be. So yeah. I'm pretty happy, pretty stoked.
Yeah, I agree. And I know there's been a bit of a, I would say not an absence, but
Maybe happy was the wrong word.
No, it's we have not been
happy to be here with you.
Yeah, it's great to be here with you. And I know there's been a bit of a lag since our last episode, but to be explained, I am currently just bought a condo, selling this house, moving, finishing the last 2 weeks of class, and working. So life is a bit crazy, but we manage, even in the craziest and busiest of times, to come together. You know, it's certainly in our world today, just doesn't stop. There's always something going on. So it's always funny to say, hey, let's, you know, I'll be the one to say, I've got a punt. Then the next night, you know, hey, I've got a punt. But there's always something to talk about. So all we have to do is give it 24 hours and it gets a little nuttier. So yeah, but before we dive in, as always to our listeners across the world, thank you for tuning in. If you'd like more, head over to modstate.com. Always feel free to leave us any comments or anything you'd like discussed on the podcast at modstate@modstate.com. That's M-O-D-S-T-A-T-E at modstate.com. yeah, man, it's been a bit wild since our...
Have you checked out some of the comments? I need to send you a link to some of them, but folks, it's been so good. And by good, I mean it's been so bad, it's been good, that we're doing a top 13 user posts. There's been some strange stuff. I mean, it's comical, though, and some of it's very well written. I just don't know. It's that part in The Big Lebowski where he's like, what in God's holy name are you blathering about, man?
Well, I will say that as always, there's going to be weird comments, but there's been a couple constructive ones. Yeah, absolutely love it. Keep them coming.
That's not a criticism.
No, not at all. There's been some constructive ones, rather, on what topics people would like to hear or mm-hmm. some things that listeners would like us to dive into. Yes. And that has not gone unheard. It's just a matter of carving out some time to do some more research, and I'd love to, so...
No, and us being here, not that we deserve a tip of the hat or something, but it's proof positive that, no, this is a commitment of ours. We've carved out the time to do it. And it's been not in a bad way, but it's been a constant stressor as far as going back and forth, trying to work it out. It's a pleasant stressor that we knew it was going to be there. You know, it's not a negative term, but it's a reality. We have to carve that time out. And so, I mean, but I would like to personally... make a tip of the hat to you and for being here since, you know, things happened for me. But I got to say a brief thank you to the folks out there. And this is a little bit of news for our listeners, but just who were there for me. I had a bit of an accident while I was stationed in 29 Palms, a corpsman with 1-7. And it's a long story. It's irrelevant. Everything came out okay. You know, and that I lived and got discharged honorably. I couldn't re-enlist because of my an issue with my arm. But long story short, I'm very grateful to those who were there for me, folks of all stripes from all walks of life in the medical community, because I first went to the hospital in Palm Springs. I'm not going to get into my medical record, and that's not what this podcast is about. But I'm very grateful in a real sense to be here. And I got to say, things, you didn't disappoint. My old man put it, this was the best possible time for us to have gotten into this business. And I got to say, it's been that.
Yeah.
Well, there's times it feels like a bit of a continued service, but then I realize, well, it is in a sense.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I'm glad you texted me today about this milestone. And of course, I won't go into your medical record either.
No, but, that's not. Nobody wants to hear all that. I got hurt. I'm okay. I still have my arm pokes.
Yeah, but as as someone that has more knowledge, it wasn't just a little injury in coming back. So I'm grateful that you're here and grateful that we've done over 200 of these and hundreds of hours of conversation and probably thousands at this point beyond just the podcast. So
absolutely. Cause we were, again, for those of you who have joined us of late, and again, thank you very much. And also, vive la France. Thank you to our newfound, expansive base and France. So we appreciate you being here.
Yeah. And so for those, French listeners, I'm a connoisseur of French wine. So if you can, maybe we'll if you've got some good leads, let me know, because I'm
so let's send an encrypted message or two.
Certainly a fan of French wine that I can't get in the United States.
Yes, we don't like sulfates, but we do like encrypted chats.
Yes, and encrypted chats go really well with a good Bordeaux blend, but I digress. So
just make sure you don't talk, with guys with Richard Nixon's face tattooed in the middle of their back.
There's probably a
sign to avoid that individual.
There's a podcast, and I'll shout out to him. It's called the Sofa King Podcast, and it's three guys in Bakersfield, California. And
wait, the Sofa King?
Sofa King, yep, Sofa King.
All right.
And it's just three dudes, a college professor, an IT guy, and a telecommunications dude. They're just friends, and they literally chat about topics in a very comical, not suitable for work type of way. It's hilarious, but they have a whiskey wall.
One final note, think about this as a bizarre segue here. Okay. I briefly left the planet, folks, during this incident 5 years ago today, and made my amazing, hey, went from, hey, your son may not be here when you land, to my parents who, in 3 months was getting discharged from the hospital and wasn't brain dead. So the leap year factor is what I mean by bizarre, and that I went down for 18, 19, 20 hours, amazingly, came out of the hospital 3 months later, not brain dead. Well, so the injury occurs February 28th. My recovery stretches into, hey, he's not going to make it to, well, he's breathing. We're going to have to intubate him, but COVID and came back. So is it March 29th or is it March 1st? It's a dun, dun, dun. And I feel like it's absolutely, folks, you haven't disappointed to the Americans. I'm speaking strictly now. It's not that we're trying to exclude anyone else, but it's just our particular brand of crazy. And folks, I mean, in a very Joker-like manner, you haven't disappointed. Wouldn't you agree, sir?
I agree. Well, what, we just dive right in, huh?
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, and to finish my thought, the Sofa King Podcast, they have a whiskey wall where...
I'm so sorry.
Oh, you're good. They have a whiskey wall where they're...
Folks, I'm rude.
Their fans send them whiskey, so if our French listeners want to send us some Bordeaux...
Yes.
I'll make a wine rack, and we'll shout them out, but...
Why don't we deliver it ourselves? We'll do a live... Edition there,
yeah. When we finally get together and we can do this on camera, we'll do a sommelier type of open up a bottle, let it breathe, and talk some notes and some nose. And anyway, so yeah, you're alive. It's a crazy time. It's Mardi Gras, and
yes, Mardi Gras just ended. It's a perfect time, folks, to have all that stress relief. We just refer to, doing something, getting together and put on an expo. It's like a type moment because things have just.
Yeah. So where do we start? Do we want to start with a potential pandemic, or let's just start there?
I feel like it's a perfect place to start because shock of all shocks behind both of my big tenants, sociopolitically, is the mainstream media. Mm. At the bottom of it all.
Yeah, I think there's a couple different ways to look at this, or at least that's approach this.
But in both issues, both topics for tonight,
No, absolutely.
Media is the big culprit of any major issues.
So there's a couple places I'll start, and I'll start from what I know best, and that's healthcare. And it's actually interesting that the COVID-19 or the coronavirus, whatever you like to call it, is now certainly stretching internationally. It's really interesting to see how contagion spreads, and I think this is a really good case study of that. However, things that public service announcements, and I'm not saying to discount the fact that COVID-19 could be potentially really dangerous, but there's also influenza, which it's still a pretty bad flu season. And, you know, so the general precautions, at least for our listeners, I mean, this goes for everybody across the world that listens to this, that, you know, universal precautions still are the highest standard. That means don't touch your nose, don't touch your face, wash your hands, and don't cough in people's mouths. So it's, I mean, it's pretty basic. I don't know that the precaution measures will change much with COVID-19 if it becomes a big thing in the United States. I think they're saying wash your hands more, and I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing for any contagion. However, it's really interesting that none of this is classified. However, literally a couple months ago, I met with a bunch of healthcare companies in a conference hosted by the Colorado, Colorado Public Health Service. And ironically enough, the topic, and there's a number of topics they go through, it's a round table or a sand table type exercise where we discuss whether it be an earthquake in Colorado. Just a thing. And this just happened to be...
You discuss things.
Yeah, this happened to be about a pandemic. And mm-hmm.
Programming?
Nope, not predictive. And what you mean by predictive programming? I'm gonna pause ignorant here.
maybe was meant a jest, because that's as if you were with a group of men in black suits.
I see. Yes. No, that would have been more classified. But
no, the cigarette. Well, okay. You think he'd say he was doing something classified?
That's true. So this was a sand table on what we would do, and the public health department obviously has a fairly good alert system, and I'm not underestimating the ability of any public health service in any state having an ability to have an emergency management system in place.
Well, there's only one person who's been responsible for anything done wrong thus far, so I mean, we already know that, but do continue, please.
But what alarmed me really was the sort of lack of communication, and I think it goes for a potential pro for more of a universal healthcare type command and control. However, that's not the point of this conversation tonight.
Nate.
What was illuminating
because we were getting along so well.
What was illuminating was the just absolute lack of communication and coordination between more for-profit healthcare entities. Now, for example, if I take dialysis, and most people don't know how dialysis works in terms of a coordination effort.
Are we still talking about the meeting here?
Yeah, this is part of the meeting.
Okay.
Right. We've got, you know, hospitals present. My company is present, and skilled nursing facilities are present, etc. But because they're all separate entities, all for profit and all their own business, there is no coordination. So for example, in dialysis, you know, I bring patients to a center, and they come from home, they come from nursing facilities, they come from all over, and really there's no coordination and no conversation going on about how we would handle these type of pandemics. And so I'm not, as a healthcare professional, I'm not abundantly worried about COVID-19. I mean, we're talking about one or two or three cases in the United States, and there's 350 million people in the United States. However, what makes me less confident is how we would react if it did become a large issue, and I'm just not confident at this point that it will be. That brings us
big issue would be, can they make more of whatever?
Well,
that comes down to a matter of production. I'm not so concerned about our response.
Yeah,
to that.
And it really is supply chain too, right? So if we get products from Germany and stuff like that, you know, that's because I think it's proving that. And I guess this is a good segue. That's the medicine side of it.
Hold on just a second there. Let's give credit where credit's due. The response in the People's Republic of China, you got past all the funding, all the BS, all the propaganda, and the people that have been disappeared. Okay, the reality is their response, any salvation for those people will come from American pharmaceutical companies.
potentially, when if there's a vaccine in 18
months. I'm talking about what's on the ground right now.
Well, yeah, and there's certainly...
Who are they importing drugs from?
Well, and here's the thing, though. I personally believe that it isn't just China's sole issue. I think that this is exactly how the world needs to respond, that you're not solely dependent, or the credit is due for any nation to come in as the knight in shining armor.
That's not how I meant that. Well, they're for-profit enterprises, but I'm saying let's not get it twisted here. The United States is more than capable of an effective response here.
I think in terms of supplies, yeah, I think you're right. But in terms of borders, in terms of just the way...
In terms of technology, research, and supply, I'm confident we can handle that.
I hope so. I mean, it's... You know, there is an absolute...
It's interesting to hear people that are not in favor of the administration's immigration policies.
Well, and it isn't just about it isn't just about immigration. It's about global travel. In a globalized...
Border.
In a globalized... And I mean that not really necessarily in terms of immigration, but in terms of just the globalized nature of the world today. I mean, if you look at the...
question what we're going to do with regard to with American citizens. It doesn't matter if they're in Antarctica. Or we have an obligation to take care of our own.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you. I think it's just interesting to me from like an epidemiologist hat, how these things, you know, nature and biology doesn't slow.
No, please don't take me as contrarian.
No, I don't at all. And I don't think
it's really annoying when people do that. I promise folks, that's not what I'm doing here.
No, and I don't think that we have an argument here. I think we largely agree. It will be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I think, let's just look at the facts now.
Right. And you started to go into Germany. Fact there, I want you to continue.
Well,
I felt like that caveat had to be there because I want Americans to realize that the panic is unnecessary that the media has, in my opinion, tried to incite.
And that's maybe a better segue here, right? And that's why I wanted to lay out sort of my confidence level now. Again, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not a virologist. I am not a microbiologist by any stretch of the means. However,
tell them what you are.
I'm a nurse. I've worked in acute care. I've worked in trauma. I've worked in critical care. I've worked in largely now manage community-based health. So, I mean, it's not for it's for chronically sick individuals, but I manage that, and I manage a population of 100 people who are chronically sick and immunocompromised that largely spend 12 hours a week in a room next to each other. Even in that small kind of cohort, watched sickness spread, and in sort of an interesting case level type of scenario, and very anecdotal. So this just goes. My point is moving to the point of the media and moving to the Trump administration and moving to supply chains and the stock market. There's a huge part of me that has confidence that this will never reach the scale of how devastating the flu is every single year. However, there's another part of me that goes, I don't know how largely prepared we are for this. And that's not a knock on Trump. That's not a knock on Pence. That's not a knock on the Department of Health. That's none of that. It's just, I don't know how confident I feel just by the experience that I've had with business and how they would work in unison with the public health department. So, not because there's any animosity between the two, but because none of us have really lived through it. So let's move on. So it's always shocking to me to watch the stock market respond to events. And there's certainly been a correction in the market. And I think it's, you know, people like to point to the fact that it's COVID-19 or the coronavirus, but largely I think it's the potential impending recession or the catalyst to a recession that this might bring along. I know there's been talk about a recession for quite a while, and this certainly could play a role in supply chains.
Absolutely.
And so there is no doubt in my mind that this could absolutely disrupt supply side, not the demand, but the supply side, and there could be a recession.
The demand in reality that's what could throw things off, is demand could get skewed and in some ways get higher.
And if you think about it, this would be a case where there would be in a way, it isn't that supply just can't keep up. There just isn't supply to meet a even larger demand, which, you know, doesn't...
Think about the sale of batteries if this thing's gonna... Think about the sales of bottled water.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, literally, you know, we're moving and...
It's two minute examples, yeah, but I mean...
Yeah, we're moving, and even my wife said, you know, I think maybe we should just get a couple extra bags of dog food and actually talk about this kind of bug out bag that we've been talking about having. And that's not some hoarder... apocalyptic type response, but we are seeing what's happening in China. We are seeing, and folks, the absolute reality is I have a piece of paper at work with my boss's signature on it that essentially, and now not that my boss has the authority to do this, but it essentially is a curfew letter if martial law was enacted that allows me to go to my place of work because I deliver care. And I've signed them equally for all of my employees that at least says when you get stopped that I have to be out after dark. I have to be out at this time in order to provide care. And that could be a reality. And that has what has happened in China. And I urge people to not underestimate the fact that this could happen in the United States or other places in the world to prevent a contagion or a pandemic. So I'm not fear mongering here. I have thought it very interesting that the stock market has corrected, and we can talk about how that plays into Trump and politics in a bit. But I will say that the media, I have 28 TVs in my office, and they're either tuned into Fox, ESPN, MSNBC, or CNN. And at least CNN, it is non-stop coverage of coronavirus, and it is as if the world is ending. But there's two ways to think about this. It's either sensationalism for the sake of news, or it really is a political move. And I can see why a lot of people, especially maybe beyond Trump supporters, but libertarians and conservatives, whether they don't like Trump or not, see this as a highly politicized move, especially tracking Trump's sort of response to...
Lot's going to come down to the Fed, though. The key thing, I think, to watch here is going to be consumption. Supply chains, I maintain, maybe I'm wrong, I believe the supply chains will prove resilient enough.
Well, but
I don't think that's going to be the issue. I think the matter, because 2 weeks ago, the Italians and the South Koreans didn't think this was going to be a problem either.
Yeah,
and it's become an issue because people panic.
I don't know, dude. I almost take the opposite stance from you. And it's funny you bring
don't
that
think
up.
They panicked?
Look, I think it's ironic that you bring this up because I literally was driving home the other day thinking about... and there were some stats on the radio I was listening to, or a podcast or something, about GDP and consumption still largely being positive. And I was just driving in traffic going,
well,
literally, I was driving in traffic, sitting on the highway going, I don't think there is a damn person here that cares about COVID-19, could care less. Yet the media is making it out to be the apocalypse and the end of time. And I'm thinking about consumption, thinking about supply and demand. And I just say, when have Americans ever cowered, you know? And
well, that's not what I was referring to.
Well, I know, but you're referring to the fact that you're thinking that it could be more of a demand side that really pushes this. And I say, I just don't see it being the demand side that it really...
I think perhaps I emphasized the wrong point. I think the greater point to me was to stress calm, because I believe that our supply side, I believe that the folks that put products out there, I think that side of things, I believe will be okay. I believe that our economy is prepared to act, because I believe also... Yes, whether they're acknowledging it or not, the Federal Reserve is prepared to add it. I know they don't have much room to work with in terms of interest rates. It's a problem with them being so damn low. One of the problems with it, the rates must go up at some point yesterday. But watch for some quantitative easing. I could see, I believe they probably already prepared a contingency plan for that. They do have room to work there, a lot of room, actually.
The bond market still seems relatively stable.
Right.
You know,
so that's more what I was trying to stress. Not, I'm not saying Americans will get spooked either. I agree with you. They're not likely to cower. Like, that's not what.
And
I'm not all saying there's not, there is some disagreement between us, but I'm not saying that Americans would cower. I'm saying that I think the, what I think rather as opposed to them responding in fear is that I believe their, the habits of their consumption would be altered drastically. What they're consuming. I believe companies like Apple could be in for a rough quarter.
Well, and I think you're right. So you're saying that it isn't that.
They're going to respond in fear, or, and I'm not calling the Italians and the South Koreans cowards by any means, but what I mean is Americans would respond. I mean, we know that economics itself is a study based on, obviously, supply and demand, but is based on unlimited wants versus finite supply.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And what they are going to want is going to change within that period.
Well, and it's true. I mean, let's say this continues to grow and become an issue, and
Duracell is going to be great.
Yeah. Well, let's say summer tourism season, which generates a lot of money, that's still consumption.
Restaurants are going to suffer.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough.
Point you're wanting to drive.
I think it is. I think it clarifies at least your position.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying there's not any disagreement between us, because I think we disagree on the, to clarify for folks that are like, okay, so what are y'all saying? I think we disagree on the severity.
Maybe, yeah.
And where.
So the other...
Because you're more worried about the supply side, for sure.
I am a bit. And that comes back to my sort of confidence that this won't be, at least domestically, as big of a deal as it's being played out. But globally, it absolutely is. I mean, China is at a standstill, and China is a huge manufacturer, and has disrupted supply chains to this point. So one thing I want to step back from very quickly.
Look at what, 50 million people quarantined?
A huge amount.
Something like that, isn't it?
I should have made this this public service announcement about 30 minutes ago, and that is, I think that this is an interesting conversation to have in the context of any type of pandemic. So let's say this just fizzles out in 3 years. We're going, remember this COVID-19, the coronavirus? You know, I think it's just an interesting thing to talk about in terms of any context in the next 10 years. Like, how is demand affected? How is supply affected? And I think that any business or any economist would have that is rooted in economic intelligence would be running these numbers. So,
all right. Well, this must be true because it's from the Washington Post. But as of the 24th of January, China had quarantined 24 million people. So, yeah, I 35 million people. So, I believe that it's probably at 50 or higher by now, because I know it's the severity of their response has gotten worse. There's been shock of all shocks, abuse of journalists. Mm-hmm. I mean, by abuse, I mean they don't know where they are.
All right. So, here's a fun COVID-19 coronavirus fact, and it's true.
Are you being sincere, though?
I am being sincere.
All right. I feel compelled to say that. That's important.
Do you know the origin of the coronavirus?
I heard tell that it was from a meat market in China, Wuhan.
Yes.
Am I saying that correctly?
So the epicenter is Wuhan, but the actual source.
I heard it was meat.
So as of right now, it's from bats.
Yes.
Yes. So it's actually, they found researchers.
How did they get in the meat market?
Well, it just might have been centered around a meat market. So here's what they think. So researchers in China specifically took body fluids from bats that they captured in these caves in China, and found this novel coronavirus. It's just a virus. I mean, animals, all sorts of animals have different viruses and parasites, but not all of them jump the barrier from that specific mammal species to humans. So
we prefer not to test that.
I mean,
to push that boundary.
Yeah, and quite frankly, it doesn't become an issue until it is an issue. It's kind of like debt.
Until start making out with bats, you know, just don't do it.
So they found that, as they were doing this research, they looked around these caves and they're like, well, this is like a pretty interesting, this looks like a hangout spot for locals. So they started testing people in the surrounding area and found that they had antibodies to the coronavirus. Now, because it presents itself as like a respiratory disease or a respiratory acute illness, they're really not on the lookout for it. But yes, there were plenty of people in the surrounding area that actually had antibodies to the coronavirus. So it doesn't mean that, well, what is it? There's bats in the Wuhan meat market. No, it might be that
it means
someone
they weren't drinking Corona.
Exactly. So they could have been someone that was in Wuhan that had this specific type of coronavirus that had mutated to the point where it was much more susceptible to humans. And so, yeah, so bats. There was a number of things thrown around. There was the meat market, cobras. There's all sorts of weird stuff. But also, I don't know if this is entirely true.
You and your adventures.
Yeah, I don't know if this is entirely true. I am sure that it falls somewhere in this statistical, some sort of percentage between 16 and 38. But Corona sales have actually dropped because Americans are associating the coronavirus with the Corona beer.
Stop.
I swear to you. Like,
I was kidding.
No, so those are two fun COVID-19 facts.
No.
So
stop,
let's,
dude.
In the remaining, you know, waning latter portion of this episode, how do you feel?
How do I feel, Nate? How did you just make me feel?
Okay.
Let me show you on the doll where the Donald touched me.
Okay, this is a good segue. All right. So I have to admit there's a couple interesting things about
I've been so eager to hear this.
Okay. Because Nate always has these. I find it interesting.
You're a brilliant guy. I've been looking for this.
The irony of handpicking Vice President Pence to be the deliberator and director of the coronavirus response
when he's evil
has
and
not
hates science
eluded me. It isn't that he's evil, although some people will argue
yes.
that.
Yes.
It is true. It is true
he hates science.
That Pence, Mike Pence, may not be the most forward-thinking scientific individual within the Trump administration.
Let me ask
and
you
I think,
this. Do you think
I
Ron Klain was the best choice as the Ebola virus store?
Maybe not. Maybe not. But what
I'm
I
not
can
saying
say
he
now,
was
what I
the
can
worst
say,
choice.
What I can say, is that he did not act or may not have acted similarly to the way Mike Pence responded to HIV when he was the governor in the Midwest.
Correct. For instance, the needle exchange outbreak. However, I'd like people to know something. The shock of all shocks, the mainstream media is not telling you when they report that to you, is that there wasn't a legal provision for such at the time in Indiana. And he was governor, not a dictator.
I realize that. However, his more religious, ideological approach or thought process to these type of things.
Pray about it?
Are a little interesting.
If he had a prayer rug and did it three times a day, would you have the same stance?
In what regard? What context? I don't see.
Because
look,
he said he had to pray about it.
No,
That's my point. That's
look, I don't care if he. I don't care if he has to pray about it. Go for
his
it. So long as
two different issues.
So long as your response is appropriate to match the issue at hand. I don't care if you pray about it. However, if you pray solely for it and leave just thoughts and prayers to it, or discard
okay,
it because
no legal provision for such.
That's fine. But as a leader, do you always need legal provision to move forward on something that's for the general welfare of your?
I just find that fascinating on the heels of people that, and I'm not targeting you with this statement. But I've heard this dialogue from people that have harped on nothing but the extra legality of this administration, its willingness to do so. And here, but we're going to criticize the vice president for his reticence in the past. I just, as someone who prefers to err on the side of not conservative ideology, but conservatism in terms of government intervention, I'm not fault. His reticence.
I'm not saying he was necessarily right or wrong. I'm just saying to Not to mention, I understand that they would like some sort of coordinated communication about coronavirus, but it seems like there's nothing that can be said by the administration that isn't first overlooked by Mike Pence, which I guess maybe they've had some, maybe that's just the track record of the administration not being aligned with their appointed administrators and the president himself.
Yeah, I'm not sure why people are shocked by mixed messages.
Well, there's been plenty of mixed messages with the Trump administration.
That's what I mean. I'm not sure why they would be shocked by mixed messages, period. So I don't lay that at the feet of the vice president, however.
Anyway, point well, being...
I'm asking you. Do you find fault with the vice president?
I don't know that I find fault in the vice president. I don't think you can find fault with anybody right now because there's three cases of coronavirus in the United States.
What you are driving at?
What I'm driving at is his track record with, his approach to healthcare and the management of epidemics and the management of disease in the past hasn't been maybe the most stellar. Legal statutes in place or not, I think it's what I think is less of my opinion and the way I see this politically, right? So I don't know if it's the media really playing this up to try to make Trump look bad. I don't know if it's if this is a an opportunity
what,
for
what do they want him to do? Handle it himself?
No, I think largely people just dislike Mike Pence.
They do, and there's also an absolute fabrication is being told here, and that they've cut funding across the board for NIH and the CDC combined for three straight fiscal years, and that's simply not true.
I don't know the facts on that, so I can't speak to that. But it's a good question, and I found myself asking that. Is what exactly is it that quote unquote the haters are what are we so upset about?
AOC?
Well, I mean, maybe a doctor for starters, an epidemiologist, maybe, I don't know, or a virologist or something along those lines maybe would be more appropriate. But if the president wants Mike Pence to do it, then that's what the president gets to pick.
Consistency in the coverage then.
Fair enough, and I think that's
if you're going to do that, nobody has a problem with claim.
Yeah,
a lifetime bureaucrat.
Look, I recognize that the president has the ability to appoint whoever he'd like.
I'm sorry.
So, but what I find most interesting about this is the politicization.
It is. You're right there. Of this matter. You're absolutely right there.
But that's also it's election year, right? I don't want to say misstep, but every negative from this point on until November, every possible, so largely, other than the incredibly controversial things like in the immigration policy or what was the Mueller investigation and then was the impeachment, you know, the president has had a fairly sound presidency, right? He's had a great economy. Wages have gone up for the most part. Unemployment's pretty low. We can debate the merits of whether or not he inherited it or did it himself. Either way, he's lived through it. He's weathered some pretty awful storms for himself, personally, and his administration. This is really the first negative thing, if you think about it, that he's had to go through. That is the stock market correction, which is this is something that he's always touted as the stock market. He's always had a stock market that's been that's been positive, and now we have a correction. He has to deal with this issue of a growing or potential global pandemic that would come to the shores of America. And
well, I want to pause real quick, not literally by any means, but in that the administration has now it got cut out of the deals apparently. But the administration has in the past proposed cutting funding for the CDC.
Of course they have.
But I wanted to reiterate, I knew that. I just fact checked that on myself, though. But I wanted to stress that this business that they've gutted NIH is not correct here.
And that's
the amounts of grant allocation has actually gone up.
And that's fine. But it, I mean,
I just wanted to, yeah, I don't like that scare.
I don't have the numbers or anything to tell you, but my guess,
I just wanted to stress that I feel like that's fair to.
Yeah. And I think the reason I didn't bring it up wasn't necessarily because I hadn't researched it, but a conservative,
I didn't mean it that way.
A conservative. No, but what I'll say is a conservative federal government typically likes to cut spending to federal agencies. So it wouldn't surprise me at all that he would cut funding to the CDC.
Because now I will clarify there. Someone like me, as you know, as a fiscal conservative, I'm not opposed to federal spending. What I'm opposed to is that monstrosity, that apparatus that is so ineffective.
Sure.
That
meaning more government agency, not necessarily. Right.
I'm opposed to more federal hiring.
I was going to say
what President Obama, for instance, meant when he said investment in we need to invest in the American people. He meant we need to hire more federal employees. I'm opposed to that.
I think that's a really good delineation saying, listen, if there was one government agency, let's just pretend there's two government agencies. One was the military. And the second was the CDC, because for whatever reason in our hypothetical world,
infrastructure. It's one big infrastructure agency, and that includes.
So it isn't that you are opposed to spending to that agency. It's to the broader investment of making those agencies larger. I'm opposed to public spending. Sure. So
I'm opposed to spending it. To clarify, I'm opposed to the agency, whatever label you want to slap on it. And federal employees in some office pushing paper, to use a stereotype, yes. But because we've both been a part of that.
I was going
to
say,
great
that,
things.
You know, it's funny. I'm supposed to be the left-leaning guy, and you're the right-leaning guy. But to be honest with you, living through it, it is chaos. Excuse me, I don't know what that was. Chaos. It's chaos, dude. The amount of I'm not bashing anyone who might be a federal worker. It's the
lot of federal civilian employees that weren't coordinated.
And amazing people.
And want to try.
However, there was a lot that it was like, wow.
It's just Chief Arnold put it best when he said, you know what the problem with this place is? And I remember I said, well, Chief, I've heard several versions of that, but I would love to hear yours. And he said, it's too many chefs and not enough ingredients.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the case.
Yeah, indeed. So, we haven't even touched on the Democratic race. I think we save this for, we'll tease it for the next episode. But
there's multiple races involved, silly.
That's very true. But broadly, the next, we got five minutes to talk about, or a couple minutes to talk about where we stand now. It seems that Bernie Sanders seems to be a bit of the front runner right now. It appears that the it appears that the Democratic elites, if you will, don't really like this. And I'm just saying, I don't know
Mike Bloomberg is not going to be the nominee in any universe.
So there's two things. I can't even begin to predict what would happen if Bernie Sanders kept his front runner status all the way up to the point where the DNC
steal it from
would
him fair
steal
and square
it from
again.
Him. It's one thing.
If he has 51%, there'll be riots. If he has 51% and they try and take it from him since because that was his big accomplishment coming, and I'm not being snarky when I say that, folks, I do love to elucidate on this, someone who, in agnostic political terms, admires Senator Sanders, and I'm being serious, because he's a politician who has not changed his platform largely for the better part of 5+ decades. Okay, find me a politician that doesn't change any of their positions largely over the course of 5 months. So from that, again, an agnostic macro political perspective, I'm an admirer of his. Okay, how obviously I am diametrically opposed to any form of formal embrace of a socialist apparatus. I think that's adding more cancer to the stew, if you will. But without getting into what goes into the sausage, if you will, I think he's got to have 51% going in because he doesn't survive a second ballot. There's no way. Now, if they take it from him otherwise.
I was going to say, what percentage of sort of angry millennials, young voters don't give a shit about that, that see him as the front runner and see it stolen from him no matter what?
A second time, they feel?
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, 51%.
The superdelegates folks in the DNC, they're largely elected officials.
I realize that. I'm just, I will be curious.
I was clarifying for our audience.
No, absolutely. I
would have been snarky towards you.
No. Right? I didn't take it that way. If he has the majority by 1%, there's four candidates, and he's got 26%, do the math for the rest of them, and it goes to someone else, no one gives a shit about why or what political process happened. Just stolen. That's it. Fair and square. I'm not saying that's the way I feel personally. I'm just saying that's the way people will see it. It's sort of like the popular vote versus the electoral vote, where
right. And people, the millennials by and large, actually, I give credit where credit's due here. Millennials by and large do poll well in terms of general political knowledge and do know that the superdelegates are outside the mainstream, like they're elected officials. They're not your typical electors or delegates, that are
I think that there's a general worry
being stolen.
Yeah, and I just think that there will be no. I don't think it'll
especially
be as quiet.
If they tried to give it to Bloomberg or Steyer.
Yeah, or if Biden wasn't polling that great, wasn't doing that well, and he still got it.
Think about that for a minute.
It will. First off, that's just a politically horrible move by the DNC if that happened.
But a billionaire gets it, and I'm talking about for supporters of Sanders. And remember, a lot of the people who have left Elizabeth Warren, you know who their support went to.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
Listen, well,
those people are going to take that line down?
It's the exact opposite.
It's a mistake.
Do you think they would?
Socialism would officially, they may as well pack up the sidewalks, proverbially speaking. Their movement is dead. I don't care what AOC says if they don't put up any sort of fight there. I encourage it to be through the legal system. I get it. I would not vote, or I'd vote for a third party, or I'd vote for you do whatever you want to do.
Well, but I mean, but I would
stay home.
Do you think it's a disaster if the DNC, like, let's say they swing it to Mike Bloomberg?
If they pull anything like that?
Yeah.
If they pull anything like that, it could
backfire.
Kill the party as we know it.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely.
Because we're talking about, only 15 to 25% of the party. I mean, only, I think, 18% self-identifies as progressive. That's why, some of this poll has been so extreme. But that's a separate conversation. We both know that.
Yeah.
But as far as, to me, it would be on par on the Republican side if they had pulled through that inane plan to try and take the nomination from Trump in 2016, which that was discussed. And y'all are crazy. They'll burn the city of Cleveland down.
So do you think, and again, we could turn this into a 2-hour conversation, but to kind of, let's tease this for the next one, and I'll write the notes down so we pick up on this. But do you think that back, a year out, or less than that, in 2016, there was talk that Trump would destroy the party, yet he seems to have unified the party. Does Bernie fit that same structure?
It depends on what happens. And yes, this is a perfect dun-dun-dun, and you got to make sure that's in your notes because it's a perfect thing to resume. But short answer here, and you hate the answer depends. Everybody does. It's like, come on, it's a brand. No, for real, it does depend upon what happens in terms of if he wins the nomination, loses, it doesn't matter if he loses the election or not. In terms of his legacy is secure and the movement is officially, nobody can deny its credibility because they've gotten a candidate on the ballot of one of the two parts of our duopoly, our monopoly of two. So it's a status quo protected by things like Citizens United, which we feel is unconstitutional money, but that's the system. It doesn't matter whether we like it or not, but I think it matters how this goes down.
Exactly. Well, we're going to stop there.
Yeah. Secure.
we're going to stop that there then, because I feel like that's a good teaser for next episode. So as always, my friend, it's an honor and a privilege to do this. And we're glad that we can bring some good conversation broadly to the world. If you're listening to this, tell your friends, head over to Mod State. Yeah, I always do. Head over to modstate.com. Leave us a note at modstate@modstate.com.
We've got the podcast page up.
Yeah, indeed.
We're still working on it. Obviously, we've got to flesh out the descriptors, but we're actually building a page there, folks, kind of having a multimedia version of the homepage. So, indeed, like you see the editorials and the op-eds, analysis, whatever, gonzo journalism, we're trying to, you know, bringing the Jesus back, you know.
Oh, are we?
I mean, that's the same thing that we're trying to set up for the slash multimedia, because we are going to bring back the YouTube channel, and hopefully we'll do that before we reconvene in person. But we'll see what happens here in the next few months. But
indeed,
at any rate, it's been absolutely great to be here again.
Absolutely.
And we'll try and return with that to be continued, folks. We'll try and bring that to you sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. Well, until next time, my friend.
Au revoir.
See you.